He got such a little aw shucks look on his face.
When was that?
She's like, well, thank you. And I was like, cute as that. Don't worry, these things are not on. It's okay.
Yeah,
they are now.
What? Are they?
Yes.
Oh, shit. Oops. Hi.
That's going to be a bumper.
You're listening to the Metamore City Podcast.
Metamore City, a podcast series created by Chris Lester. For more information, please visit www.metamorecity.com.
I can't believe there's a champagne called sex. It's like effing vodka.
It's sect, actually.
Sect.
S-E-K-T.
I like my way better.
Me too.
But it's like effing vodka.
That would hurt. That would fucking burn fucking vodka.
It is. It actually is called effing vodka.
Oh, man.
All right. And we're back. And woo-hoo! Rachel, the episode that had the flashback scene with Danny and Rebecca as teenagers in her phony memory was chapter 25 of Making the Cut. So if you go back, listen to that one. It's the first episode after the six-month time jump. And the first scene where we see Danny again is in that flashback. So just refer back to that. All right. Cool. Is there any more
Kitty.
Of that message?
Oh, is there any more,
there's
Rachel?
Plenty more.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Read a bit more.
She is really involved, and I think you should appreciate this sort of...
Oh, I really do. Rachel and I have had some good email conversation going back and forth, and I appreciate her interest.
Would you say you're email BFFs?
Not quite.
Well, soon then. All right, next. I hope this clarifies. It was kind of anticlimactic and made me feel that after you downgraded her character, that she was just a female copy of Daniel, which I know wasn't your intentions after all that hard work from the previous chapters. I feel sad for Danny, because her character arc seems broken and disconnected by the end of the book, rather than fixed. But Daniel's is almost fixed. I look forward to seeing you deal with this issue in the future, though. I'm sure you'll turn it around since you have very careful character arcs, which listen to the character's wants and needs, rather than 100% writing it over with your own, but still give them a solid sense of direction.
Yeah, there will, like I said, definitely be more with Danny in the future. She is not just a female copy of Daniel, but what she was under Jared's influence was not a real person either. She was what he wanted her to be. And so a lot of the divergence that we saw in her personality shortly after she met him was due to his influence. And so once that was removed, then she had to figure out who she was when she wasn't with him.
Which is gonna take some time. Jared is very much the Jim Jones of Metamore City, isn't he?
I don't know. I mean, he doesn't mean to be.
Well, neither did Jim Jones.
That's arguable.
Well, a lot of good local history. It might help you as you're developing his character. People's Temple in San Francisco in the 70s. Jim Jones's development as a character was really frighteningly weird, but great material.
Sounds interesting.
You know, Dan's only defending the cult leaders because he has that kind of charisma.
He does.
It's true.
So totally.
I'm not lying.
If the apocalypse comes, Dan is going to be the tribal chieftain, the lord of Oakland and everything.
I'll be like his 10th wife. You should see
No. You'll be way earlier than that.
You should see the shirt that he used to have. It faded out a long time
It was a present, yeah.
I found this at some random t-shirt shop, but it said... cult leader looking for followers. I saw that and said, oh my god, I must get this for Dan.
She presented it to me on the set of Hunting Kestrel in front of the cast and crew. And I put it on and they were all like, oh god, that so fits. Dan, and I'm sitting here going, I don't know what to think about that.
No, secretly he said, oh, I knew I misplaced this somewhere. Oh, you found my shirt.
You have to understand, I've had some very uncomfortable run-ins with cult leaders over my years. So being shuffled into that category on the basis of charisma alone is kind of like,
well, I'm just saying,
just on the basis of your
I
charisma.
Drink the Kool-Aid for you.
It's all
that's so sweet.
Or warped.
Nothing says love like drinking poison.
And you wouldn't let me bring Kool-Aid
Mark
to the party.
I just don't like sugar.
Okay. Next.
Next.
Kitty.
Oh, no, there's more.
There's more?
Of Rachel?
Yes.
Holy shit.
This is all I get to do. Bless you, Rachel. Okay, and then she says, oh, and I have to ask, what are the limitations of magic?
Mm.
For example, couldn't Abby Preston's uterus... Wait a second. Where are we going with this? Okay. For example, couldn't Abby Preston's uterus, even if it heals weirdly, be fixed by magic? And beyond that, are there limitations for magic's can and cannot do's?
There are limitations. And one of the limitations is that healing magic only works on tissue that is currently damaged. So if it is healed naturally and you've got scar tissue that's set in, healing magic, at least the kind that's available to psychic healers and to other human practitioners, can't just restore that scar tissue.
Would you have to go in like surgically and remove the scar tissue first and then...
And even that would probably be a bit risky. It's the kind of thing that where the damage that was done to her was so extensive and they had to do such a hack slapdash job of repairing it.
Now, I can't remember it because I listened to it twice, but mm-hmm. I was also in the middle of mixing down my final episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't remember, did she get shot in the uterus or stabbed?
She got stabbed.
Oh, right, it was Victor, a Zeus thing, right.
Yeah, Victor tried to cut the baby
that's
out.
That's right, I remember
her.
Having that conversation, because Zeus carved the child out of Hera and ate it, and then Athena sprang whole from his head.
Ah, okay.
Ew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Greek mythology is great for that.
Yeah, show. I know it, I just try to forget it.
Yeah.
But yes, so it can't heal scar tissue. The other things that mortal healing magic can't do is it can't heal any damage to the central nervous system.
Mm.
So severed spine, brain damage, all those sorts of things.
If I could be a real prick and ask,
mm-hmm.
is there any rationale in the magical system for that, or is that just a rule that you found interesting?
It is a rule that I found interesting. It's also just because of the complexity of the connections that are involved.
Okay.
It's a very detailed sort of thing. Psychic healing really doesn't work well on things that are very complex on the small level, like an injured kidney, for example. The gods are capable of providing some healing. The priests of Eli are able to pray for and receive miraculous healing for some of those things. And it's also possible for the fallen goddess Akala to restore those kinds of things. But she's the head of the Department of Health now. She's the leader of the International Red Spiral. She's got a lot on her plate. So you can't just show up at her door and say, hey, I've got this screwed up uterus. Can you fix it for me?
So this answers the question, what if Jesus had been a politician?
Something like that.
He'd work for the Red Spiral?
No, he'd be sitting behind a desk and be like, tell those people in line to get healed to go to a fucking doctor, man. I'm busy. I got reports due.
Did you fill out your forms in triplicate?
Yeah. So one of the goals of the Summer Cell is to eventually try to earn enough brownie points with the Lightbringers to be able to call in a favor and get Akala to heal Abby for them. Because at this point, she's pretty much the only one who could do it. Which is part of why they are. You see Abby doing a lot of work for the Lightbringers in some of the later stories. So, any more over there?
Yep, there's one more.
Okay.
She says, thank you for answering my persistent questions. I look forward to also seeing the upper levels of Metamore City as well as the politics of the governing bodies and opinions of the lower levels. Classicism is a great writing material.
Indeed it is, and you will see lots of stuff with the upper levels and the noble families in season 2.
She has great questions, very picky in a good way. I like that.
Yeah.
Shows she was paying attention. It's really great.
She's also the one who left that really thoughtful review on iTunes that we covered in one of the first feedback shows.
Yeah.
I wonder what her rules for vampires are.
I'm not sure.
Kitty.
Okay, I've got feedback from Marcy.
Marcy!
Hey! And Marcy says, hello, Chris. I just finished listening to the final episode of the season. Wow, good stuff. To me, it felt like your skills as a storyteller improved over the last year and a half.
I hope so.
Or maybe it was just your confidence behind the microphone. Either way, the last two episodes had me in tears at a couple of points. That's not something that happens all that often, and it takes a great deal of skill as a storyteller to do it. Still looking forward to more. Marcy Alana.
Thank you, Marcy. And it was really cool getting a chance to catch up with you and Rose again at the last pub
call.
And she also notes that there was a Marcy in your last episode, and she was quite happy about that.
Yay, cool. Yes, Marcy in the Metamore City Police Department. She is the office manager for Precinct 9. So you'll see more of her in bits and pieces.
Okay.
Not literally.
Ew.
Well, I have to clarify with this crowd.
She didn't meet Joss Kyle in a dark alley and try to kill her. Right. Kill him. So she's probably safe.
And she didn't meet Percy in a dark alley and smile at him.
No. They reserve that for the people they like.
Right. And she didn't date Victor, so she's safe so far.
So far.
From Tristan.
Yay, Tristan.
The end of season 5.
Oh, we're receiving messages from the future.
I thought this was funny and would be funny to put on a feedback show. It's finished. Chris Lester has uploaded the last episode of the last book of Metamore City, Season 5. The story is over and everything is resolved. He uploads it to his FTP and puts up the blog posts. By this time, his listenership is massive, and hundreds of thousands of downloads begin almost instantly. Chris is finished. His life purpose has been fully realized. The world over will now know the whole story.
Dun, dun, dun.
This is the point where Chris, in body and heart and soul, is complete. He relaxes and something interesting occurs. If atheism is true, this is where Chris's body just lets go and fades away. Aww. If not, this is the moment where, like Muhammad, Chris physically ascends to heaven! Aww. I loved making the cut. Tristan.
Thank you, Tristan. And while I do not believe that Metamore City is going to turn me into a bodhisattva anytime soon, you never know.
Well, you could always just make yourself a chariot, douse it in gasoline, and light it on fire.
Okay, me ascending into heaven is more likely than me developing the necessary mechanical skills and the necessary stupidity to pull that
stuff. No, it's Elijah.
I know.
Ascended on a chariot of fire.
I know.
You gotta have
but he didn't have to manufacture the darn thing.
Well, that's true. Someone else sent it to him, and he just walked on a chariot that was already burning.
Actually, he didn't even. He took the whirlwind up. The chariot separated him from Elijah. That's right.
You know, I think that's kind of called being a poser.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a technical term. Did you make that chariot? No? You're just riding it. Okay, I see. So this one is from... Oh, I almost read the town name. Ah. Wow, that's a really long name.
Who is Anchorage, Alaska?
I are smart.
She has a master's degree.
I do. That's the sad part. I have an MBA, and I'm like, oh, your name's Christchurch? Wow.
You have your master's. Do you have your submissive degree yet?
No comment. What does that mean, Dan?
I don't know.
Watch Ms. Calendar fail at feigning ignorance. All right, so this feedback, it's great. Why don't we read it?
Yeah, of course, there is no sex on brass needles.
There is no sex.
I am Ms. Calendar's feigned ignorance.
Do you have anything to say, oh feigned ignorance of mine?
No, I just thought it would be fun to reference Fight Club for the second time in this episode.
Drink. All right, while he drinks, I'll actually read this. This is from Ian Ross, and the subject is, thank you. I know that they are only two little words, but there is a lot of feeling behind them. I have really enjoyed your work, both here and at world building. The last few chapters of Making the Cut have really touched me. Aww. I have just finished the last chapter. The snippet after the credits was a wonderful touch. Thank you, Chris. Regards, Ian Ross.
You're welcome, Ian. Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure.
Kitty?
Kitty, 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 mushroom, wow. Mushroom.
A Dan. Oh,
where does that song come from?
It's Badger. It's an internet
Okay, I'll
disease.
Take the next one.
I'm fine.
Oh, you are?
I'm fine.
Chris Lester. Okay.
shut up.
Wait, no. No one says that. But me at parties.
I am a shark.
Shut the fuck up.
Okay. So this one is from Nathan.
Nathan Criminal.
Oh, Nathan.
Criminal.
Oh, okay.
Different
Not
Nathan
Lowell.
No, different.
Okay. Hey, Chris, great job with the last few episodes of making the cut. The fight scene in the warehouse had me on my toes, and now I'm eagerly awaiting the confrontation with Abby, Sasha, and Victor. I questioned you heavily about Victor last feedback episode, and this time I'm going to turn my nitpick toward Abby Preston. In episode 21, when Daniel and Abby meet, would a 16-year-old Abby really have the presence of mind to serenely tell Daniel that the absolution he seeks is not going to come from her? Abby's speech to Daniel about Abby not being the path to Daniel's forgiveness seems a little bit mature to come out of an abused, terrified, pregnant 16-year-old on the run from the father of her child and concerned about the safety of her child from the very people she's running to for help. If anything, she'd probably react pretty negatively toward another person viewing her primarily as a means to an end rather than sounding like some sort of disappointed saint. It could be Hive upbringing or her past experience with the trauma, of course, or it could be that Abby was just too damn tired to keep running. However, without any more explanation of her motivations, that scene seemed a little out of character for her. Maybe if I had known Abby a little bit more, this scene wouldn't have stood out to me as, where the hell did that come from? Apart from that, all I can say is more.
Yeah, the whole thing with that scene with Abby and Danny really surprised me too when I was writing it, because it was one of those scenes where I put the characters in the room and then watched what happened to them. And we were seeing it from Danny's perspective, so we couldn't know what was going on in Abby's mind. And it was one of those situations. She hasn't seen Abby for 5 months. Closer to 6 months. Abby's gone through a lot of stuff since then. And Abby's always had this sort of creepy, there's something not quite right about this girl thing about her, because she has so much power. And because she's constantly getting these telepathic signals from people around her. And I think in retrospect that what was happening there was almost a sense of her mirroring back to Danny what was going on in Danny's own subconscious. Because those are the kinds of terms in which Danny would have seen what she herself was trying to accomplish with Abby. And so Abby kind of
acting like an amplifier rather than speaking her own mind.
Yeah, she was reacting to what she heard from Danny's own mind, but using the vocabulary that she pulled from Danny's own head.
And he concludes, apart from that, all I have to say is more. Podcast faster, damn it. Dance, monkey, dance.
Dance, monkey, dance.
Dance, Sotirius Jones.
Well, thank you very much, Nathan. I'm glad that you enjoyed it. And Abby's an interesting character, and I look forward to seeing more of what goes on with her, and to particularly exploring more of the ramifications of her soul meld with Sasha. Because that definitely introduced some new little wrinkles into her personality that weren't there before. All right.
Should we go to a voicemail?
Yes, let's go to some voicemails.
Hey, Chris, this is Skeet. You probably don't know me, but I'm calling you anyways because I just want to tell you how much I like your podcast. Your book is awesome. Metamore City is probably one of my favorite podcasts. Very professional, very put together. You know, it's something that I think people should buy versus, you know, getting for free. But I'm not arguing because
you should set up a tip jar.
So you keep up the good work. And, you know, I can't wait for the next I don't know what you're going to call it, the next segment to Metamore City. I think you've got a lot to offer to the podcast world, and you've got a great group of actors. You pass that along to them, and take care of yourself. Look forward to hearing you soon.
Well, thank you very much, Keith. When Metamore City Volume 1 goes up on Podiobooks, you will be able to donate via the tip jar that is standard on all Podiobooks offerings. And in the meantime, if you want to show your appreciation, you can donate to the Arise High School Science Fund, which is stuff that I have to pay for out of my own pocket unless I raise money for it to help my students. So that is at arisescience.chipin.com. So anything that you donate there directly helps me, helps my students, and it's a great way to show your appreciation for the podcast in a way that's tax deductible.
Wait, how do you spell ARI?
That's ARISESCIENCE.chipin.com.
Yeah, because that's what I thought of when he said ARI. Thank you.
Hi, this is Mark Clark from Billings, Montana. Actually just listening to the Metamore City stuff right now.
Oh, wow. I can
hear really like it, except for some reason with my iTunes, I can't get... Oh, gosh, probably about 10 episodes. I don't know why. It won't load it for me.
Oh, I had the same problem.
I guess I can try the website. Yeah. I'm not used to having to do it that way. But I just wanted to say that I really like the full voice casting. I think you do a good job with the effects. The story is very interesting, and it's just really cool. Hopefully someday I'll get to fill in the missing gaps in the story, because I'm kind of confused. Because last I knew, Daniel had just gone for the pub with Eva, and then the next chapter that I can get to play right, they're trying to capture Victor. I'm a little lost.
Wow, that's a big gap. Cool.
Yeah.
I love the story. Thanks.
Yes, I apologize for some of the download problems that people were having. Please go back and subscribe to the new feed at metamorecity.com, and you should be able to download all the intervening episodes that you missed. And for future reference, people, if you are playing the Metamore City podcast in the background while you're leaving feedback for Metamore City, please turn down the volume, otherwise...
Or hit pause.
Yeah, or hit pause. Otherwise, you risk causing a temporal continuity loop.
Infinite feedback.
Or you should just reverse the polarity.
Eject the warp core. That always works.
Eject the warp core. I think we know who's a Trekkie on this podcast.
Me. Kitty and I met at a Star Trek party. Yes.
How adorable is that?
Go see the new Star Trek movie. It rocks.
We will.
I will someday.
This is Mildred Katie. First of all, Mildred. Making the Cut is an excellent piece of work, and watching it grow has been a joy.
Aww.
The production quality is great. Your cast is fantastic.
Yes,
and
they
the story
are.
Has made me laugh, cry, and grip convenient objects in fear for the lives of your characters way too many times to count. I enjoyed how the last chapters gave us resolution for various storylines, including for poor Jared, but also set us up for the fact that life does go on after the story is over and leaves things open for the stories that are going to start on Triple Threat and with the stories that you are collecting for the interregnum between seasons.
Hmm.
Also, I'd forgotten that Artex serves a trickster god until you told me on Twitter. It's going to be very interesting to see how that one turns out.
Oh, yes.
Other notable moments in the last two episodes. I love the fact that it was Evan who helped Daniel and Brian catch Victor. It was a very nice touch to have Brian read Artax's spell scroll. And I cried during Sasha's funeral.
Yeah. Aww.
I really appreciate the symmetry of the Summer Cells having to wait for another decision from the Hive. And it gives us a sense of how much the members of the cell had grown from when they were waiting outside the doors the first time.
Yeah,
one last thing, and it's based on something I heard on J.D. Sawyer's
I also think
Antithesis,
brilliant.
Predestination, and other really, really long titles.
8.2. Oh, snap.
Chris Lester, you're not only letting, but encouraging Daniel Sawyer to get his hooks into Metamore City. Gods and goddesses. This is scary. One conversation that I had with Dan on Skype will let you guys know why this makes me shudder with no small degree of horror. What makes your and Dan's writing so different from each other is that we can trust you, Chris. While we know that bad things have to happen to characters because otherwise there wouldn't be a story, we have the sense that it's safe for us to care and have warm, fuzzy feelings about the characters in Metamore City. We have a degree of confidence that things will turn out right at the end. Or at least the ending won't completely suck for everyone. We know that something horrible and painful happened to Abby when she was younger. And when we met the child Abby, we knew that things weren't going to go well and she had a whole lot of hurt to go through. Mm-hmm. Yet, at the same time, we had the comfort of knowing that she'd be alive, yet changed, when all was said and done. Not that there wasn't a sacrifice, but the fact that Sasha still lives on in Abby makes the sacrifice worth it. I got a similar feeling hearing Morgan for the first time, knowing that she was immortal, but it looks like you're saving that story for later. Mm-hmm. Perhaps making the cut too, or whatever you're calling it?
Things Radic unseen.
And Malcolm are still around, but they have suffered a setback. The almost too evil to be real Victor has been defeated and killed before he could drag anyone else with him down his path of self-destruction. So while the future still has clouds on the horizon, the bad guys and good guys have gotten at least something of what they deserve. Additionally, that trust between the listener and your writing is still possible even if the listener has not heard the other stories that happened after making the cut, but came out first in the podcast. However, with Dan in antithesis, the only thing we can trust is that Dan will put his characters through the absolute worst trials, and we will never know if anything is going to be right at the end.
Okay, I have to respond to this. Uh-oh. Because there's a difference between putting people through hell because it's fun.
It builds character.
And putting people through hell because it builds character. The characters in antithesis are all people who have... We enter their lives at a point in their stories when they have... They're all involved in a business where you can't trust people.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all people who value their relationships and value their integrity. And those two things are set right against each other. And it's that dance between fidelity to relationships and fidelity to integrity mm-hmm. that sets up all the central conflicts in Predestination. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the book, some of the characters have planted their flags on whichever sides they're going to be on, whether they're going to choose their cause over their integrity or whether they're going to try to continue the dance or vice versa. So it's not, but she's right. You can't be sure who's going to live, who's going to die, who's going to destroy themselves, or who's going to redeem themselves. Mm-hmm. And if I told you that, or if I intimated which ones you possibly could root for in that sense, it would remove the central suspense from the book.
Right. Making the cut plays heavily on dramatic irony.
Mm-hmm.
It was written after those early short stories,
mm-hmm.
knowing what the end was going to be and knowing that the listeners would know what mm-hmm. the end was going to be. And it right. plays on that.
Yeah. And Predestination does too, but the listeners don't know where it's going
mm-hmm.
and you know where it's going. So you see a lot more of the dramatic irony that will become apparent upon subsequent listenings.
Right.
But even now at the end of book one, a few listeners have gone back and listened through again and noticed the ironic turns going forward that you don't notice the first time through because mm-hmm. you don't know what's coming. But that's intentional because it gives you an incentive to go back and another layer to peel away.
And if you guys want to, if you want a book that is really going to be great for that,
oh boy,
Down from 10. I know I've already read the ending of it, and so as Dan is showing me scenes from earlier chapters where he is putting not just the gun on Chekhov's mantelpiece, but a freaking howitzer, I'm just reading through
a dancing howitzer.
I'm reading through these lines and saying, oh Dan, you fucking bastard.
He says, drink. Yeah, I need
he needs booze.
Just drink it out of the bottle.
Have my champagne.
Oh, okay, here's the champagne. he's not joking either. He sits and reads, and I'll be in the other room. We show each other our stuff to workshop it sometimes. I'll be in the other room writing or cooking or something, and I'll hear, "Oh, you fucking bastard!"
Do you have to drink when you call yourself a bastard in someone else's tone? Him. I know, but drink anyway.
Love champagne.
So go ahead and continue.
Even now at the end of Predestination, there is a sense that, yeah, here's a slight breather, but the excrement will hit the turbine again when free will starts. I suppose that's the main reason that people consider his work to be so much darker than yours.
Ooh, good point.
It's not safe at all for us to like the characters in Antithesis.
Yeah.
Because there's no reward or punishment based on the character's actions.
Okay, there is reward and punishment based on the character's actions. There is not reward and punishment based on the character's goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I get what she's saying, and I completely agree. I have to say.
Please do tell.
Having read both of your work, and read for one of your works so far, I really feel that Dan's work is a lot darker than Chris's work. Chris's work, and not meant as a pejorative at all, is a lot more YA in the sense that I feel okay giving that to younger people. I would feel okay with them learning the lessons in there because it is a lot about, you know, the universe is going to be set right.
Mm-hmm.
That there is sort of a cosmic goodness and no person is really going to be put down more than they can handle. Whereas with Dan's work, it's just like, the world all bets are off.
Yeah, the world is a brutal place. Get over it.
Yeah.
But, and there is a... There's a reason for that. One is that there's different sensibilities.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The other is that because Predestination and the subsequent books draw heavily on the American Revolution,
mm-hmm.
there is a deep cynicism in the way that the American Revolution was conducted.
Right.
It was conducted by people who were convinced that, as Jefferson said, quoting John Locke, all that is necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so because I'm drawing on the American Revolution, I'm taking that idea about how the universe works and really playing it up. If these people stay home, they're going to lose.
Yep.
If they go out and play, they might not win.
But they've at least got
a seat at the table.
They could stem the tide, whereas
right.
doing the what they call it the honorable thing and not dirtying your hands and getting involved
right.
benefits no one.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you are going to see some heroes in the world of Metamore City who have to get their hands dirty too and do things that they don't want to do.
if you can cut this out if you want to.
Okay.
But I want to drop this in here because I'm going to excerpt this bit of the feedback show and put it on mine too.
Okay.
As far as the excrement hitting the turbine in Free Will, this is the prologue to Free Will. The book, the words that open the book, this is your first teaser. Official transcript. Transmission from Gagarin Station Operations Division intercepted 1735 GMT, 15 December, 2127. This is Gagarin Station to Persian vessel Rubaiyat. In deference to the lives of the 10,000 civilians currently on board, and by the unanimous vote of the command staff, I am authorized to deliver the following message. We surrender.
Ooh, I got goosebumps.
Woot.
Squee.
I just get that feeling sometimes when I listen to Dan's work that, like, nothing good and happy and puppies and rainbows will ever survive again.
No, good and happy puppies and rainbows don't survive, but there is great joy and great beauty. It just has to be fought for.
That's like the end of the first episode of Star Trek. Happy gratitude and great joy.
Oh,
great joy and puppy dogs.
And rainbows.
Puppies and rainbows.
Puppy dogs made of rainbows.
Oh, boy. Quick, before Pip comes in with her rainbow flogger.
It's just an ever-deepening spiral of emotional pain, political backstabbing, potential physical violence, and impending war.
Yep.
Oh, on a side note, but damn, he does it good! When allowing Dan into the gates of Metamore City, we get some progress towards solving the man-love deficit problem.
Yes.
Well, I guess I can't complain too much now, can I? Thank you, and keep it on the bright side. I look forward to the future of Metamore City, and, well, if all goes well, I'll see you at Balticon.
Awesome. Bye, Chris. Thanks, Mildred. Thank you for your extensive, thoughtful feedback.
Oh, that was fun.
That was fun.
And yes, I'm going to be solving the man-love deficit in Metamore City.
Mm-hmm. And the story that Dan is writing for me, it's a story that I wanted told in this setting, but I didn't think that I had the chops to tell it, and Dan does.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
What is it, Ms. Callender?
Are you sure you want to know?
Yes.
Dan's sitting here saying he's going to solve the lack of man love makes me think of slashing in a fanfic, Dan and Chris.
You're not the first to suggest that.
You know what? If anyone has slashed Dan and Chris, please send it to my personal email.
Calling Pip Ballantyne. Calling Pip Ballantyne.
No, seriously. Send it to me. Miss Calendar at gmail.com. Send me your slash of Dan and Chris. I need it.
I don't know what it is about me that seems to draw this kind of reaction from my fan base, because I've had like friends attempting to slash me and Brian too.
It's because we know we'll never see it in real life, sweetie pie. A girl can dream, among other things. Where were we? Feedback?
You'll have to tell me later about some of those other things.
It's a little warm in here.
Well, it is a realm with wizards like Artax who have magic wands.
That's right.
You bastard! I can't believe you said that. Oh my god.
And if you could see the things that he'd done with his magic wand, you'd be amazed.
Officer, no.
Time for one of the
Stranger Danger.
Which is about as sexy as it gets. Chris looming over them, his face flushed with concentration.
Get out of my head.
Oh, next feedback, next voicemail.
Next voicemail, okay.
Hey, Chris, this is Nobilis, in the middle of listening to episode 40, that is chapter 30 of Making the Cut. At the scene where Fiona is saying goodbye to Miria, and I know I've said this once before, but you absolutely made the right choice in casting Christiana Ellis in that role.
Hell yes.
Damn.
Yeah, I still remember that she was a little uncertain about it, and had some difficulty at first, like trying to find the character's voice, and the fact that Fiona was so emotionally constrained at the beginning, and I'm like, seriously, you are the best person for this part. Mm-hmm. And she gave me everything I could have asked for out of that character.
Yeah, just she was
nailed
good.
It in every single note. Christiana, you rock.
Yeah, and on the strength of her performance, she's playing Idel in Down from 10.
Nice, nice. She'll be good for that role.
Can't wait. Can't wait to hear her.
Yeah.
Oh, Miriam Bakhtavar is so still around. Oh, my God. Could you have telegraphed that any harder?
He wrote this in the... left this message in the middle of listening to episode 41.
I'm surprised even Fiona isn't suspicious. Okay, go back. I'm going back to listening to the rest of the episode.
I never got a response when he actually heard the epilogue.
He's probably plotting your downfall at Balticon.
Never know.
Wait, who's not plotting his downfall at Balticon?
Yeah, I mean, they're planning on auctioning me off. I think that they've pretty much made a conspiracy at this point.
No, you're just going to be sold into sex slavery whether you want to or not.
Why can't I go to Balticon?
Because you're coming to BayCon with me.
Yay! Woo! Can we auction off Chris at BayCon?
In absentia?
No, you'd have to come to BayCon.
I'm glad you appended those last two words.
You're welcome. So the nighttime brings out the dirty, doesn't it?
Well,
always.
Among other things.
And the champagne.
I think the company brings out the dirty.
Chris, I can't believe you did that. I can't believe you dedicated making the cut to Brian and me. That
this is
Sarah. So sweet of you.
Sarah.
I had no idea that you would do that. I was in my car on my way to work. I was listening through the credits and waiting for the epilogue. And then I heard that. I started crying, dude. Aww. You made me cry. And I got to work. You know, I was all teary-eyed, and I told Brian, who was there, that you made me cry. And he was like, why? I said, listen. And I played it for him. And he got, like, he put his eyebrows went all up, and he got, like, the precious moment teardrop. And he started quivering. He's like, did he just dedicate his book to us? And I'm like, yeah. And I started crying again.
Aww.
So... thank you, Chris. That is so nice of you. I don't know what to say. That is like the nicest thing ever. You know, God, thank you. And I'm pretty sure Brian thanks you too a lot.
She's not entirely sure. So,
thank you. Bye.
Yeah, you are so welcome, Sarah. And Brian sent me a very personal and heartfelt email the same day, and what can I say, man? I mean, you guys were, your friendship made that whole sojourn in Egypt of going back to Michigan and spending 4 years stuck there, made it all worth it. It's one of the few things, well, actually there were several good things that came out of that whole experience, but the friendship that I developed with you guys was by far the best. And if I can show in some small way my appreciation for you guys and for what your friendship means to me by, you know, putting a few lines at the end of my novel, then I'm going to do it. And I love you both and miss you terribly. And I'm really looking forward to seeing you again at Balticon, because it's been too long.
And remember, San Francisco is only 20 hours drive.
From Michigan?
Oh, hell yeah.
How do you drive, Dan?
No. It's 3.5 days, Dan. I've done it several times.
Okay. Oh, because you got to go north, huh?
Yeah.
Day coming.
There's some of those states in the way.
36-hour drive, if you're driving all the way through.
Right. Which, unless you're a trucker.
Nor you got multiple drivers in the car.
I have to say that I think the sweetest part of that phone call was when she said that she told Brian that you had made her cry, and he's like, why?
I know, that was adorable.
I thought that was so
cute. Like,
I'm
going to go beat him up for making you cry.
Oh, it's in a good way. I guess I'm not angry anymore.
And I can.
I like how she said she was pretty sure he thanks you too.
Yeah, I'm total. I can totally picture the whole Brian with the precious moments look too. He gets that little puppy dog face.
Aww.
It's adorable. But
little put in.
All right, let's take a brief commercial break and come back with some more.
The rest of the emails.
The rest of the emails.
Check. Okay.
Check. You got your knitting in my sci-fi.
Doing in my knitting.
This is up.
Oh, it's tangled. Wait a minute.
It kind of works.
It actually does.
It's nice.
It's strangely wonderful.
It's so smooth.
And creamy.
Hello, this is Miss Callender, the host of the Brass Needles podcast. Join me every week as we discuss science fiction, steampunk, costuming and cons, cosplay, role-playing, and, of course, the wide variety of topics that fall under knitting. You can download the podcast through your podcatcher of choice, available on iTunes and brassneedles.com.